Australia is the second driest continent on the planet, yet it's covered with waterways, river systems, wetlands, dams and estuaries, sustaining life, growing food, offering a place to cool off and play, and providing channels in which we can transport and travel. There's a beautiful hardback book out now by award-winning author and historian Ian Hoskins called Rivers, the Lifeblood of Australia. Ian joins me now for a chat about it. Hi, Ian.
Hi, Jenny.
There's so much significance, isn't there, surrounding water, culturally, environmentally. It's sort of the heart of our life, isn't it?
Well, it has to be. Everything that grows depends on water, and therefore water connects everything. And therein lies the wonder of rivers and also the complexity facing people who have to manage rivers. And the Murray-Darling Authority would be in the minds of many people in South Australia as it is in Victoria and New South Wales, because the water that you get at the end of the Murray, particularly down at the Coorong, begins flowing into that vast complex system in southern Queensland, believe it or not. So your interests are linked to theirs. And I recall very, very clearly a debate, not altogether civil, between the one-time Minister for Water Resources, Barnaby Joyce, defending the irrigators at the top of that system in a little town called Dirranbandi, and your former Premier, Jay Weatherill, you know, arguing for the rights of people for water down to the end, because it's all connected.
When did it start to get political? It's one of the most contentious waterways in Australia.
Well, indeed. It starts to get political in 1840, I guess.
Oh, really?
And that's when Lord John Russell, from on high, and on high is in London, suggested to the colonial authorities that the Murray would be an ideal boundary because it's there in the landscape, so you don't have to draw up a line. So if you look at a map, you'll see a very straight gun barrel line from Cape Howe to a little-known place called Forest Hill, which is where the Murray begins, spouting out of the ground. And then the boundary between, or the border between Victoria and New South Wales is Wrigley, because it's the Murray River, and that's, you know, the suggestion of Lord John Russell. It separated colonies, but subsequently separated states, and then flows into South Australia. So whenever you have three political bodies sharing a resource, and the water begins one place and flows to another, so if you take it out at the top, the people down the bottom, that's generally you, don't get it, then it's inherently political. But it's there as a border, it's there as a shared resource. So it's the most contested river, I would argue, in Australia.
Mm. Ian Hoskins is with me. He's a historian. He's just put out his hard book called Rivers, the Lifeblood of Australia. When did Europeans start using the Murray for transport and other things?
Well, Europeans were quick to head out to see what lay beyond Sydney and hopefully to find water, because Australia was established, in my mind, as a penal colony, without a doubt. There's some contestation about that idea, but an agricultural penal colony. So convicts would serve their time and then get given a bundle of land without regard for the people who were here before, of course. But to farm that land, you needed water. And as more and more people arrived, you need more and more land and more water. So rivers were what guided this exploration. So the Murray was discovered by Europeans, that is, in the 1820s, it first named the Hume, because Hamilton Hume crossed it at what's now Albury, but later given the name Murray in the late 1820s. And so they've known about it since then, this magnificent waterway, and you know, gradually people, the Europeans drifted down that way, and the rest is history, so to speak. Irrigation for the Murray begins in the late 19th century. It's primarily a Victorian concern, New South Wales less so, and South Australia was mainly interested in the Murray as a means of transportation.
Now, of course, you've sort of alluded and pointed out that there were people before Europeans in Australia for, you know, tens of thousands of years, actually, and the Murray holds particular significance to the original custodians of the land.
It sure does, and Europeans blithely gave a single name to the extensive waterway, so it's the Murray, but there were dozens of Aboriginal groups, if you want to drill down to clan levels, who were living along the Murray, and each one of those almost certainly had a different name for their part of the river and probably a different creation story to go along with that. The Narrangeri people, who are the traditional owners of the land around the Coorong, and who are still there and are still deeply attached to that area. It was so wonderful to meet them when I was writing this book. Their creation story revolves around a giant Murray cod, which Aboriginal people in that area, as I understand it, refer to as Pondi or Pondi, P-O-N-D-I is the name for Murray cod, which emerged out of the ground and flapped along and created the course of the Murray. Now, those people in that sea country area where the water can be brackish as it comes in from the sea and mixes with the fresh water, they have a particular connection to that area that would be very different to the understanding of the Murray further along around Albury or Mildura or wherever.
Mm. And the guy on the $50 note, the Narrangiri man, David Unipon, he...
well done. Yes, indeed. David Unipon. And it was his writings, I think in the 1920s, but don't quote me on that one. I think he wrote a book in... I think it was published in the 1920s anyway. He was very keen to get over the story of his people's attachment to the land. An extraordinary man. And it was from his book, I went back and read that I gleaned a lot of those creation stories and the term Pondi.
Because he said the Murray cod is the fish, very important.
That's right,
fish.
Yeah. Yes, yes, exactly right.
And then in the Coorong region, which is part of the Murray, of course, it's the mouth. The mouth is a really important part of a river, isn't it?
Well, isn't it interesting? Mm. The subtitle of the book, Lifeblood of Australia, was suggested by the National Library of Australia. And when I saw that and they asked me to write it and here's the title we'd like you to use, I thought, oh, well, look, it sounds a little cliche, but okay, I'll go with it. But quickly realised that even in Western thinking and philosophy and understanding of the land, there is a sense that the earth and the natural environment is a living organism. And that goes back to Greek notions of Gaia, which some of your listeners may have heard of. Gaia is almost like Mother Earth. And when you start thinking about it, veins of rock, river mouths, you know, our terminology for elements in the landscape often draw upon body parts. Yeah, so the mouth of the river is very important. Of course it is. Every part of the river is important, but what I think you're referring to when you say the mouth is important is a Wetherill's observation that rivers die from the mouth up, and that was in relation to concerns about the Murray being terribly affected around the Coorong as flows reduced and the mouth closed up. Literally, you know, that there wasn't enough flow to keep that opening open.
Yeah, and also the significant ecological environment where the mouth meets the ocean as well, right? It's quite a beautiful coming together of different creatures and plants and things like that.
Yeah, so that's unique there. And Aboriginal people, again, the Narrangeri, are very protective of that. But European Australians, non-Indigenous Australians, have also realised that, or some of them have for a long time. So Colin Keeley would be known to many of your listeners because of Storm Boy, the wonderful book he wrote about that. And that was, I think the date was 64, certainly mid-60s, when that was first published, alerted people to the beauty of what must have been a fairly isolated area back then, and that was one of the themes of the book. But he wrote about threats to the Coorong and the Murray again in the 1980s as a nature writer. So we've been aware of it for a long time. One of the things that distinguishes non-Indigenous uses of the land and rivers in particular is that we can often cherish a place and write sensitively about it, but then also regarded it almost in the same breadth as a resource to exploit it as if it's a machine.
Mm.
So you just extract water. And the Snowy is a good example of that. You know, yes, this iconic river, yet we build a great whopping dam at Jindabyne and starve the bottom end of the river of water. Well, the Coorong or the Murray and the whole system is a great example of that. Yes, we love the Murray, but, you know, how do we partner that love with sustainable use? You know, that's the dilemma.
Thanks so much for your time today, Ian Hoskins. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for your interest. Yeah, nice to talk to you.